Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, it was a great weekend.
or I should say a great week. But, tonight's going to be a terrific night from everything I can read here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got, you know, one of the biggest fights of the year on tonight. So,
yeah.
Should be pretty entertaining. Saul Canelo Alvarez against Miguel Cotto. Looking forward to this. Mexico against Puerto Rico yet again.
Yeah. Right. You know, and the old adage of believe only half of what you read and most of what you hear. There was an article in Boxing News, Fight News this week about the WBC stripping Cotto of his belt. And what it turns out to be is that he didn't feel that it was worth $350,000 to have a sanction, nor did he feel like paying almost $1 million to have his next fight sanctioned. So he said, hey, I'll sit with $1.1 million in my pocket rather than that, theirs.
Yeah, what happened was the total was $1.1 million. We always hear about the sanctioning fees that fighters have to pay for the belt. Where it's a little odd, though, is that the way the scenario played itself out was that Cotto was set to pay Gennady Golovkin $800,000 to for a step aside fee for the right to go ahead and defend his title voluntarily against Canelo. The additional fee for the WBC, the WBC sanctioning fees are typically 3% of the fighter's purse. Because Cotto is making $15 million, they were going to cap it at $300,000, as opposed to 3% would have been like $450,000 or something. But they capped it at $300,000. So with the $300,000 plus the $800,000 for Gennady Golovkin, he had to pay $1.1 million. He decided not to pay that. He decided, you know, you guys could take the title. Golovkin and Loeffler and K2 Promotions, Klitschko Promotions, they could very well end up taking Miguel Cotto to court, because what he did was he held on to the belt. He said he was going to pay the step-aside fee. He held on to the belt, used the belt to negotiate the fight, obviously. And then the week of the fight, he drops the belt. And so it leaves Golovkin without – so it puts Golovkin in a position where he wasn't able to fight. You know, it kind of held the belt hostage, because Golovkin – wasn't able to fight for said title. So it left him in a vulnerable position in that manner. And then at the same time, Golovkin's not going to get the step-aside money either. So Golovkin is, I believe that his promotions and his management could end up suing Miguel Cotto to be recouped that step-aside money. So that is the issue.
That's a pretty big issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, of course, nothing does a person's heart more than somebody owing them a lot of money. But
Yeah.
Z, what do you think about tonight's fight? Or do you want to wait till we get Chris on?
It's a very good mesh of styles, I should say. I think the difference is just going to tell within the transition between offense and defense. The feet, Cotto has the edge in feet. Canelo has the edge in territory, basically meaning wherever Canelo's going to be, he's going to own that territory. Ring generalship can help Cotto, but at the same time, Canelo is not a fool. He's not just going to let you dominate a fight. The only person who dominated Canelo was Floyd, and it seemed he couldn't pull the trigger. It seemed he just wasn't really comfortable in that sort of fight. Cotto is not Floyd. And to be honest, between the both of the two, Canelo, to me, has better defense, improved defense, but better defense as far as not getting hit. Cotto is better offensively, I think, well-rounded offensively. So it's gonna be interesting. I think Canelo has the better armor, and I think he knows that. I think Cotto also knows that.
I agree with Zito in a sense. I do think of the two, Miguel Cotto has the better feet. He's the more fluid of the two. He's a more fluid boxer.
all around of the two at this point in their careers. Obviously, Canelo's only 25. He's a bigger guy. He's going to come in weighing, you know, probably about 170 tonight. So he's a naturally bigger guy, younger guy, stronger guy. But as far as just technique, Cotto surpasses him in his all-around versatility of his game. What Canelo does, he does well. Canelo's problem is he's just kind of lead-footed. But as far as letting his punches go, he seems to be a better combination puncher than Cotto. You know, they both attack the body well. They both attack the head well. I think one of the things that makes this fight so interesting is even though Canelo is a 2-1 favorite, I think most people look at this as a 50-50 fight. They just ultimately feel that Canelo will go ahead and prevail in the long run because of his youth, size, and strength. But it ultimately is a 50-50 fight. And from a technical standpoint, from a fundamental standpoint, from a skill set standpoint, you can very, very easily make a case for either fighter winning. Again, most of the reason why people favor Canelo is not because of the skill set, not because of technicals or fundamentals, but because of the intangibles, because Cotto's 35 and has more wear and tear on him. And he's a smaller man. So we got a really good fight tonight, guys.
And look at hand speed. I look at their hand speed, and there's no real difference to me between the two. Canelo's a bigger guy, so that helps him, but Cotto's also, he's a fluid guy. So,
You know, I'm going to try and call Chris here on the line because we're going to probably have to call everybody on air. The back room is giving us a little trouble here, so we'll just give him a call, quick call.
You know, honestly, Zito, I think when you look at this fight, it's just, it's a very tough fight to call. I think everyone has their opinion, and it's easy to lean hard for either guy, either way. But I think when you really look at it, what it comes down to is if Saul Canelo Alvarez is as good as he's supposed to be, he'll beat Miguel Cotto if he is the guy he's supposed to be. The young lion is supposed to beat the old lion in this type of scrap, point blank.
Yeah, if the young lion is true.
if the young lion is true, exactly. Yeah,
the young lion has to be true. And I think Canelo is true. He has fought a lot of good competition. So,
right.
I mean, he's not void of saying different styles.
Right,
he's beaten
right,
every
right.
style but one. He's actually pretty much beaten up every style but one.
Yeah, you know what, and again, the Floyd Mayweather fight is no barometer for how this fight's going to go, because neither guy is fighting Floyd Mayweather tonight. They're fighting something that's, you know, diametrically opposed. So it's going to be really interesting. And, again, I think, you're going to be looking at a fight that's going to have some, you know, what makes a good fight ebbs and flows. And I think you're going to be looking at a fight that has, you know, tremendous ebbs and flows. The other thing, too, is that neither guy, neither guy has always been great at fighting in transition, you know. Canelo is a little bit better at it because he's a better counterpuncher. Cotto's main weakness, you know, coming up in his career was he was either offense or defense. I think Freddie Roach, and I will give Freddie Roach a little bit of credit, and I think Pedro Diaz too, they've increased his fluidity so he spends a little less time in transition, you know what I mean? As opposed to kind of being stalled. He's a little quicker in transition now, I believe.
And I think that has to do with his aggression. The fact that they have him doing a little bit more and, you know, going toward the seek and destroy. Cotto moves his head good when he's offensively going forward. He keeps his balance good when he's moving offensively forward. Throws very good combinations and seek and destroy. Canelo has moments of leaning on the rope, taking wind breaks and stuff like that. So he'll just lay in his high guard for a minute and absorb a little bit. You know, he'll dip and move a little something, look for a counter. With Cotto is not going to be like Kirkland, who's going to have his head right in his chest, throwing wide punches, making an easy target. Cotto's going to have his head moving. He's going to be stepping around. He's going to
be stepping around him.
And he's going to have his angles, the left hook to the body. He has the right hook to the body. Cotto could throw a pretty good uppercut. So I mean, Canelo, he has to worry. He has to worry.
Yeah.
If Cotto is not void of hitting hard either.
Oh no! Canelo has only been buzzed one time that I really noticeably buzzed one time in his career. You know who it was to? Oddly enough, it was to Miguel Cotto's brother, Jose Maria Cotto. So.
Canelo's there. I mean, he's there. He's not, you know, he's not a defensive genius. What you do have to worry about is when you are letting off on Canelo, he will lean and throw back.
He will lean
to the side. He'll throw back. And Canelo.
And he'll throw back in combination.
Oh, yeah. Head into the body. And the thing is, Canelo, he is lead footed, but he has moments where he can have quick foot bursts. Toward his opponent, to where he, I mean, for the most part,
you know what, Canelo doesn't have slow feet. He just doesn't have the most agile feet. You know what I mean?
He has straight ahead feet.
Yeah, he's like
straight
a Jerome Bettis in a sense. You know what I'm saying? Like you know, Jerome Bettis was kind of, you know, he would chop and his feet move pretty fast, but he's not a guy who's going to cut on you real quick.
Yeah, Canelo, like Winky Wright. He has feet kind of winky.
Yep, that's a very good assessment. Yep.
Like very steady paced feet because he knows that wherever he steps, he kind of owns that territory.
You know what I think is going to be pretty interesting, too, Zito, is as the fight wears on, seeing how both men's conditioning hold out, especially in a war of attrition. And the reason why I say that is, you know, think of it as you want to think of it, but. The MO for both guys is that they have a tendency to fade down the stretch. Canelo, to me, he fades less down the stretch and more fights in spurts, so he doesn't necessarily fade down the stretch, whereas Cotto in the wars of attrition has been known to fade a little bit down the stretch. But that's a question mark that's, you know, kind of hung over both men's heads for, you know, the last few years of their careers either.
And one thing I can say to that is that Cotto, he's been through more than Canelo. Canelo, he's a very experienced young fighter, but he's still a young fighter. Cotto has been through wars of attrition. I've never seen Canelo beat up. I've never seen Canelo ever beat up. I've seen Cotto beat up. I've seen Cotto do things to avoid getting more beat up. Canelo, he's not a guy that does that. He's not, I mean, he has, or whatever he's doing, He demands that he's not in that position. He's usually
well,
the beat-up guy.
And I will say this. He also hasn't been tested physically. He hasn't had his metal tested physically the way Cotto has, you know what I mean, to be quite honest with you. So, that's what's so interesting about this fight tonight is because this is, you know, obviously Floyd Mayweather outboxed Canelo, but this is the first time Canelo could be in a war of attrition where he has his mettle tested. Again, we knew Kirkland was going to come out and kind of go out in a blaze of glory against Canelo. Canelo is too clean, too accurate a puncher to not do that to Kirkland. We knew that we weren't going to see a 10-12-round war, but it would have been interesting to see if Canelo could have kept the pace and maintained his cool, you know, and responded to some adversity and had his mettle tested over a 12-round war like that. And I think that's one thing that makes this fight so interesting tonight, to see how the young man will respond.
And
hey, guys, we got another perspective on that. On the line with us tonight, we have a guy that we've all read his columns many, many years and enjoyed his following of the sport, Bernard Fernandez. Bernard, how are you tonight?
Pretty well.
Good. We were just talking about
Bernard,
the fight tonight.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. Big fans, you know, sir. Big fans.
You guys were talking about the big fight, I guess. And
yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Personally, I think, you know, this has got a good chance to be the fight of the year. Of course, things don't always turn out the way that you hope or you expect. I remember how much anticipation there was for the Oscar De La Hoya Field Trinidad fight. And that sort of devolved into something less than we anticipated. But that's why they fight the fight, you know. You never know what's going to happen until you get there.
Bernard, how you doing? This is Zito. Can you tell us some of the strengths and advantages you see for each fighter in this fight?
Well, obviously, you've got a 10-year age difference for Canelo. And you figure, and really, I understand, you know, that at the weigh-in, he came in, like, close, right around 170. He's actually probably the naturally bigger man. He's a good puncher. I mean, you know, you're right. He was a majority decision or not. I mean, in losing to Mayweather, that was a unanimous decision. That was a really one bad scorecard on that. there's a chance that he could get taken to school a little bit again. Uh-huh. By Cotto, who's a very good boxer, underrated boxer. I mean, obviously, you know, he can punch, but you know, Canelo's a guy. I think the boxing world probably would be better served in some ways if Canelo wins, because you know, he's a young guy, he's popular, he's got a chance to be on top for another 9-10 years. You know. Cotto, he's going to the Hall of Fame, but you know, you just wonder how much time in his prime, you know, he has left. So from that standpoint, I think probably, unless you're Puerto Rican, you know, you figure that maybe there's more that can be mined from Canelo moving forward.
Hey, Bernard, this is Ty. I got a question for you. How much of Cotto's recent resurgence do you pin to his hooking up with Freddie Roach, and how much of it do you think is the mirage that some hardcore boxing fans think it is of his last three opponents?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I know that Larry Holmes once was asked about one of the trainer changes that he went through, and he said, hey, I've been doing this for a long time. You know, I can train myself. It doesn't really make a difference. However, you know, you saw what happened with Lennox Lewis when he went from, you know, to Emanuel Stewart. You cannot really overestimate or underestimate what a trainer change can do to a particular fighter. You saw what happened with Mike Tyson when, you know, in Tokyo with the people that he had in the corner.
Freddie Roach left. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Freddie Roach has been the winner of 7 Trainer of the Year awards. I mean, obviously. I mean, you know, the thing is with Freddie is that he's very good, you know, and I'm sure that he has implemented some changes. But by the same token, you have to look at the three people that have, you know, that Cotto's fought. They were selected for a reason. They were the guys, you know, who almost were guaranteed to make Cotto look good. Canelo's a different animal. I mean, he's better than any of the three guys that Cotto's fought, the last three guys that he's fought.
Right.
And is it a mirage? I don't know. Tonight will tell us a lot. Freddie's a guy, you know, that I have great respect for. And, you know, what he's done, you know, can't be dismissed, but by the same token, you know, those last three victories for Cotto were, I'm not saying those were handpicked guys, but they were kind of a little bit.
Yeah. No, they were handpicked. Delvin Rodriguez, yes. Specifically Daniel Gill coming down to 158. Yeah, they were pretty handpicked. Let me ask you this, Bernard. How good do you think Canelo can be? How good do you think he is? How good do you think his potential is? Can he? I mean, obviously he has the potential. Specifically, if the guy ever decided he wanted to learn English, where he could be a transcendent star. But in the ring, how good can he be? Can he be as good as a Julio Cesar Chavez or even a Juan Manuel Marquez? Is he of that ilk, or is he, you know, more like just a very good fighter? What do you think about his potential, his ceiling?
Well, I'm not ready to send him to Canastota just yet. I mean,
of course.
but by the same token, you know, there's two ways to look at this. You know, the boxing end of it. You know, how much talent does he have? How much upside does he have? How much has he shown? How much more can he show?
Right.
The flip side, and I addressed this earlier, is the fact that, you know, that he is a guy who has superstar potential. Nice looking guy, you know, has a solid fan base that it's expanding beyond.
So are you,
you know,
guys
going to
talk about
Mexican
Ronda Rousey?
American. Yeah, you know, and well, I actually wrote about that. You know, that he's, it's interesting that you know, that Oscar is his promoter, because Oscar had a fan base that was not your typical, you know, crusty, you know, ringsider type of thing. He had women throwing their, you know, underwear and hotel keys at him and stuff like that. So from that standpoint, you know, he has the potential to be a guy who can be a major attraction for another decade. You know, boxing needs more guys like that. I think, you know, Golovkin can be a guy like that. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, he came over here late to the United States, and, you know, he's still sort of finding his way in terms of being a gate attraction. But, you know, at this point, what boxing needs is superstar-type guys. And Canelo, you know, he's got a chance to break through to the next level. But once again, I mean, I give some credit that this fight is being made. I mean, how often have we seen? I mean, look, you got a guy in Alabama, Deontay Wilder. I mean, I don't know where they're going to find his next opponent, but, you know, I guess somewhere in a cemetery. But
wow.
Well, actually, I was thinking one of us might get the call, Bernard. So.
Well, same thing with Adonis Stevenson. You know, I mean, nobody wants to fight Sergey Kovalev. Nobody wants to fight Gennady Golovkin. I mean, I give credit to these guys for fighting one another. You don't get those. This is an attractive matchup. It's. I'm not saying it's a dead even matchup, but it's pretty close to that. And it's not one of these 25-1 things, you know. And
you
know,
you
so
can
I
make
give
a
these
case
guys
for
credit
both guys
for fighting one another. I'm sorry. What was that?
You had mentioned possibly they would be fighting each other. Would you think that would ever happen?
Oh, with Golovkin with the winner?
Yes.
Well, you would certainly hope so. You know, there's a
well,
lot of
well, you know what, Bernard? Now that Miguel has dropped the WBC championship, if he wins, there is no way he's going to fight Golovkin. There's no way I see him moving up to full 160 to fight Golovkin. The WBC belt was going to be stripped from him if he had won and refused to fight Golovkin anyway. Now that he doesn't have the belt, it's not obligatory for him to fight Golovkin. So I think he's probably going to, you know, if he wins, either seek a rematch or try to lure Floyd out of retirement, you know?
Well, I tell you what, you're not the only one that thinks that way, because I was in Canastota for the last, in June, for the International Boxing Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And I was at a round table. I was sitting down with Sergio Martinez and Nino Benvenuti, a blast from the past. And I was actually talking about Golovkin and what his future might hold. And I actually asked about this fighter, that fighter, and I mentioned Miguel Cotto. And both Benvenuti and Sergio Martinez, you know, who have no horse in the race, and they basically said there's no way that Miguel Cotto will ever fight Gennady Golovkin.
He definitely wouldn't go up to 160. But again, the WBC was mandating that the winner would face Golovkin. Without the belt, Cotto is not obligated to fight Golovkin if he wins at all. Canelo obviously would be obligated to fight Golovkin if he wins, but he said that Golovkin would have to come down to 155. So, you know, it gets very interesting what happens after this fight, the aftermath. But, again, we have a great fight, you know, on TV tonight, guys.
Hey, one other thing that's interesting, too, because one name that has been thrown around for Golovkin also was Andre Ward, obviously, who's had long layoffs, and he's just gone up to 175. You know, so was he going to 175 because his body told him that he needed to go up to 175? Obviously, a fight between Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev would be very attractive. But is he another guy that, you know, is moving up to a particular weight class to avoid Gennady Golovkin. It certainly looks to me that
I would say you're trying to avoid him.
Are you guys taking
I would agree with you. I would agree with you that he would be maybe moving up to avoid Gennady Golovkin, but you can't move up to 175 to avoid anything because I think Sergey Kovalev is a much tougher fight for him. So, I think he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. But I think Sergey Kovalev is a tougher fight for him just because of his size as well. So,
well, actually, Ring Magazine editor Mike Rosenthal asked me to, you know, they actually asked all contributors to put which fight that they want to see in 2016 and which one they don't want to see. And the fight that I picked that I want to see in 2016, among those that at least are reasonably feasible that might happen, was Sergey Kovalev and Andre Ward. I've pretty much given up on Golovkin versus almost anybody, you know, that, he's ducked more than a low overhang. People just are steering clear of him. And that says something. And, you know, when people say, well, you know, how would he do, against a Carlos Monzon, how would he do Ray Robinson or against Marvin Hagler or whatever like this? He's entered into that conversation. And once again, I mean, that's a leap of faith because, you know, he really hasn't had those type of fights yet. But the fact that so many people just
are so fearful
of him, it's kind of reminiscent of, you know, of a young Mike Tyson, you know, that he strikes terror into the hearts of a lot of possible opponents, you know. So you got to give some credence to that.
Bernard,
what do you guys think? I mean, you know, he's one of those guys that if he hits you anywhere, it hurts you. I've talked to some of his opponents, and they said, you know, hits you in the arm, hits you wherever, it hurts, you know.
One thing I credit Golovkin with is consistency. What he does is very consistent. He consistently has his balance. He consistently puts pressure on you. He can block shots pretty consistently. He can hit clean and take it. He's consistently a very good counterpuncher. The one fight I've seen that in is when he fought Kasim Umar. Kasim Umar was to a certain point, I mean, taking him to a tough school. It was tough for both fighters. But Kasim Umar was kind of almost winning the fight. Now, he went down, but he was kind of winning the fight to me, you know, on the feet. Golovkin, he just was consistent, and he ended up stopping Kasim Umar in the 10th, if I'm correct. Now, that's something to be said right there, because Kasim Umar, two things he does, he constantly throws punches, and he could take a very good shot. So, and Golovkin, he was just consistent in that fight. So I have to give him even all credits. Even when things aren't always going his way, he keeps that consistency going. That there is a hard thing to deal with.
What I like about Golovkin is he obviously has the amateur pedigree. And what he's been able to do is transition that amateur style into a professional style that still has the amateur fundamentals, but it's much more of a stalking, aggressive style. But there are two things that I think that are special about Gennady Golovkin. You know, I think certain athletes have certain things that are special about them. Roy Jones had phenomenal speed. The two things to me that are special about Gennady Golovkin is phenomenal power and phenomenal balance. And then you add that to his pedigree and the fact that he has, you know, appears to have a pretty solid beard, a pretty solid set of whiskers. You know, he's a tough out for anybody. And again, he's a devastating puncher, and he's always in position to punch or defend. There's some holes in his game, just like everyone else's. I don't think, you know, and it's funny you referenced the Kasim Umar fight, Zito, because he's not one who is, to me, great in transition. You know, he's kind of offense or defense. You know, he can counterpunch. He's a capable counterpuncher. So there's some things that you'd want to see some better fighters bring out of him, but to do that, they got to get in the ring with him, and to yet, that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Well,
and
actually, you know, he had a couple of rough moments, and not real rough, but I mean, he showed the occasional flaw here and there, and you know, with Willie Monroe Jr. You know, but
yeah,
you know
yeah.
the one thing I talked to Abel Sanchez last week, and one of the things that he said, because anybody who's been around Golovkin knows that, you know, he's a friendly guy, you know, he's not like a borderline psycho, you know, and but Abel Sanchez says that when it's time to go to work, you know, he switches into another mode, you know, and it's all business, and he goes about doing what he needs to do. You know, the mental part of it is so important, and I think he brings a little bit of mental stability to that. You know, that he's not unhinged. You know, he's the kind of person that he is outside of the ring, but when it's time to go to work, he goes to work, you know, and he's focused. He blocks all that other stuff out. But one, you know, obviously they got the fight tonight.
Okay.
It probably is beneficial to the sport in the long run if Canelo wins. But one thing that I'm curious about, because obviously Canelo is like the lead pony in the Golden Boy stable now. I believe that Canelo would not have a problem, you know, hey, Golovkin, you know, hey, sure, let's do it. Would Oscar go ahead with that?
Nope.
I mean, Oscar's
nope.
got so much of his company riding on Canelo. You know, does it would be a big money fight, but would
Bernard,
he want to go that route?
Hey, Bernard, I'm sure you know as much as I do that Oscar just recently stated that Canelo is not a full 160-pounder yet, and he's just now getting his man strength. So he's talked around that issue, but he's kind of, you know, alluded to what's going to happen and what's not going to happen. So.
Well, you know, the thing is that once again, if you've got a horse in the race and you don't want to fight Gennady Golovkin or you want to kind of steer clear of him, there are ways that you can say it that it doesn't sound bad.
Right.
When you're sitting down with Nino Benvenuti and Sergio Martinez and they just say, you know, this guy, other guy, you know, won't fight him. I mean, they're basically saying it, you know, what they think, and you know, they're not trying to make it nice and pretty it up, you know, they're just saying, you know, and you know, those you know, Sergio Martinez just a couple years ago was the middleweight champion. Nino Benvenuti is old school, but you're talking about two generations of middleweight champions that you know, they have a whole lot of respect for Gennady Golovkin as a guy
that's
that right. You know, has a chance to be something really special. And it's unfortunate, you know, that he's already on the down, you know, not the downhill, but the older side of 30, 33 years old.
Middleweight.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know.
Hey guys, we're joined by Dr. Chris Panarella.
Hey,
how
you doing,
Dr.
guys?
Chris.
Hey, Dr.
We're doing
Chris.
Good, Chris. Chris, we're on with we have Bernard Fernandez.
What did I miss about Triple G?
Bernard, do you want to tell him?
Oh, do we miss about Triple G? About, I mean, all the people that you know, they're taking detours around him. You know, it's like he's like a big sinkhole in the middle of the road that people are trying to steer around.
Well, you can't blame him. You know, they used to do this. That, you know, they used to this since boxing started. If a guy gets too hot and looks too good, they just go around him. They find any excuse not to fight him, and until they see a weakness in some day. This occurred with Joe Louis. When I was growing up, it was the way with Joe Louis. Nobody wanted to fight him, really. You know, they do it just for a payday. And it was a moral victory if they didn't get knocked out. And that's how, you know, Golovkin is. He once he starts that left hook to the body, you can't counter it. You got to catch it, because if your counter doesn't work and he hits you in the liver, you're dead. You're dead. So he's got a devastating style. And anybody that's been in the ring knows this isn't a good style to fight against. It's not good. And I can't blame anybody for ducking him unless it's a dire, you know. They did the same thing with Sugar Ray back when he was a welterweight. Coming up, he was 69-0. And nobody wanted to fight him. The welterweight champion, Marty Servo, was dodging him, and then Graziano smashed his nose, and he took on Graziano, and hurt his nose real bad. And he retired rather than fight Robinson. So that's not.
You know,
not,
it's
you know,
interesting that you reference Robinson, because if you remember when Bernard Hopkins won that middleweight tournament by beating, you know, unified all the titles. Well, actually, I guess he added the one with De La Hoya later, but when he beat Trinidad to have the WBC, the WBA, and IBF, they awarded him the Sugar Ray Robinson Award, you know, for winning the unified middleweight championship. But Sugar Ray Robinson, he won a middleweight championship five times. But you're right. I mean, he was never as good as a middleweight as he was as a welterweight. He was untouchable. Yeah.
He was a good middleweight, but not a great, great one. Not one of the all-time greats. But as a welterweight, I saw him fight Bobby Bell, and that's who got into the box off for the title. Bobby Bell was a 6-foot welterweight. Sugar Ray just destroyed him, bought him box around him. I mean, then he fought Fuseri, Kid Gavilan. Nobody could touch him. And he had good welterweights coming up, Billy Graham. But they weren't anxious to fight him. And, you know, so eventually he quit making 147. He just moved into the middleweights. And he wasn't the same guy, because the first guy he took on his trip to Europe was Randy Turpin, who was a monstrous middleweight.
Well, you know, the thing is that every year I send a note to Ed Brophy with people that I think should be on the ballot or be considered for the International Boxing Hall of Fame. And I said, you know, I don't know that he'll ever get voted in. But there was a pretty good fighter named Bernard Dukeson, who gave Ray one of his tougher fights. But the thing is they didn't have, you know, four sanctioned bodies back there. There were a lot of guys who would have held a version of the welterweight title if they'd had four sanctioning bodies back then, you know, like they do now. But titles have been so devalued by 17 weight classes, you know, four allegedly major sanctioning bodies, you know, that if you have too many titles, and look, the WBA has interim titles, emeritus titles, silver titles, regular world titles, super titles, junior titles. You know, if every,
not to mention the additional weight classes as well.
Yeah, if every fight is a title fight, then basically you know it means nothing. You have it's like inflation.
You've oversaturated the market.
Absolutely.
You know, you mentioned Bernard Dukeson. I haven't heard that name in a long time, but I remember him. And am I wrong? Was he from New Orleans?
He was from New Orleans and moved to California, fought there. He was trained by Whitey Essenault, who is another guy that I would like to see get inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Whitey had not only the Dukeson brothers, but he had Willie Pastrana. He had Ralph Dupas, Lady Tony Licata, and people remember Pastrano and Dupas going to Angelo Dundee, but you know they were trained and they were brought up to where they were before, you know, Angelo got them by, you know, trained by Whitey Essenault. Another guy that started falling through the tracks.
There wasn't much you could do with Willie Pastrano. He was a dancer. Strictly a counterpuncher, jabber, move, jab, move. I mean, he wasn't what you'd call an exciting fighter, had no knockout punch at all, but he could outpoint
you. Same thing with Dupas, yeah.
Yeah, and Dupas was the same damn way, same style. It's funny, that guy had more than one like that. But Pastrano, I think he eventually won the title, and I'm not sure if it wasn't Harold Johnson he beat when Harold Johnson was up there in years. I'm trying to remember who he took the title from. Do you remember?
Yeah, I think that was Harold Johnson, or was it Gregorio Peralta? I think maybe. You know, no, he beat Gregorio Peralta. Yeah.
I don't know. I think I got him. You know, because I was kind of disappointed that Harold Johnson lost, because I thought he was unbeatable. He was unbeatable as a light heavyweight, and but old age caught up with him, I guess. I don't know, but I mean, I was surprised.
Catches up with all of his partner.
Huh? How come it's not catching up with me? What?
Hey, I'm going to use that Satchel Paige line. You know, I'm not looking back, you know, because I don't want to see who's gaining on me.
Won't be me. Won't be me. But Howell Johnson, he was such a great fighter. Oh, my God. And I just couldn't see. Something didn't smell good with me. Howell Johnson had a lot of controversy. He's the one that fell off a stool. Somebody put chlorohydrate in the water, and he was sitting on the stool. He fell off the stool and couldn't get up. This is in the middle of, you know, after the bell rang, he went back to his corner about the third or fourth round. And they outlawed boxing in Pennsylvania for a year until he tried to straighten it out, but they never came up with anything. And then one thing led to another. I mean, they would, you know, try any way to beat him. He beat all the heavyweights. The heavyweights wouldn't fight him, you know. It was more or less a dull career for light heavyweight division because Archie Moore was out of it. And trying to think, Ezra Charles outgrew the light heavies, and it was clear sailing for Howard Johnson for quite a while. But I remember Bernard Dukas.
Interesting stool story. I've been in a few bar rooms where I've seen guys that couldn't sit on a stool either. Slid right off.
Well, this was funny. This was I'm like, what the hell? What happened? He fell off the stool. They told him to get up. The bell rang, and he went to get up, and he fell forward. And they found out, you know, he had something in the drinking water. Somebody spiked the water, and they caught up with him by about the third or fourth round. And I was in the amateurs at that time, and I didn't have a fight for a year.
Maybe that was from Panama Lewis's mysterious black bottle, you know, for Arguello and Pryor.
Yeah.
Hey, Bernard, let me ask you one question about another fight that's on tonight that everybody seems to have missed is the Arthur Abraham fight. What do you think of that one?
Oh, Arthur Abraham, Martin Murray, yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that I keep hearing, and I don't know how much validity there is to it or not, is that Bernard Hopkins wants to take a farewell fight, one last fight in 2016, and the guy that he's set his sights on is Arthur Abraham.
I've been hearing that too. Yeah.
You know, to win a title at super middleweight, which is the division that he skipped over when he went from middleweight to light heavyweight. Now, whether
right.
or not there's any substance to that or it's just talk or, you know, I mean, it takes two to tango, obviously. He previously had talked, I mean, because I talked to Hopkins a lot. He previously had talked about James DeGale, you know, that nothing came of that. Now he's talking to Arthur Abraham. It's got to be something that means something to him. And obviously having a chance to go down to 168 and win a title in a weight class that he hadn't competed in before means something to him. But, you know, when he's going to be 51 on January 15th. And quite frankly, I'm not really sure if there's a lot of people that would make a credible fight that TV would want to do. You know, they would say, hey, sure, give me the 51-year-old guy. Of course, if I lose, I'm going to look like, you know, I'm going to look like a clown, you know, for losing to a 51-year-old guy. But I don't know. And I think it very well could be, you know, that the Kovalev fight was the last time we'll see Hopkins in the ring. But, you know, he wants to get one more in. And as of now, you know, he's talking to Arthur Abraham. But and he says he's willing to go over there.
Yeah.
And is willing to go to Germany for it.
Because, I mean, you know, getting back to what you were saying about it being a marketable fight, marketable in Germany. And again, it might not sell well stateside, but it would do well in Germany. So obviously that's what he would have to do. But you're right, man. I kind of think the Kovalev fight was the last we'd see of him, too, though, honestly.
Well, you know, one thing I'll say about Germany is, I mean, boxing is hot over there. I mean, They put a lot of those big fights in soccer stadiums. They get there 40,000-50,000 people in there. I mean, you that can happen here, but the attraction has to be really something above and beyond, you know, to do that, because there are so many options, sporting options here in the United States. You know, basketball, football, baseball, soccer, whatever. There's, you know, you want to put something in New York, there's 40 things going on that you can, you know, events competing for people's disposable income. Over in Germany, you know, when they put on a fight like that, you know, it draws like gangbusters, you know, and so sure. I mean, even Roy Jones, remember, didn't want to travel. Now he's, you know, his passport is getting
fucked. Yeah, now he has a Russian citizen now. Yeah. Yeah.
Bernard Roy.
Bernard Hopkins is he's a proud fighter. He's going to go out, you know, with another fight, and more likely a winnable fight, you know, in his eyes. You know, most fighters, especially that caliber, they usually have opportunities to go out kind of the way they want. And I don't think he wants the last place he wants to be seen is that's that Kovalev fight.
Let me ask you one quick question, Bernard. You know, at 51 years of age, and fighting primarily over the last few years as light heavyweight, you know, what about Bernard's body responding to a weight cut that takes him to a weight he hasn't been at in quite some time?
Well, you know, obviously going from 175 to 168 is not going to be as much of a stretch as when Roy Jones beat Ruiz and had to come back down to 175, you know, taking 25 pounds of muscle off is difficult. I mean, it's a lot harder to take that off than it is to put it back on.
But remember what the 175 did to Chad Dawson against Andre Ward?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And, you know, Bernard's 51.
The one thing you have to say about Hopkins, I know a lot of people say the same thing about him that they say about Guillermo Rigondeaux, you know. Oh, yeah, I mean, he's a great fighter, but, you know, he's not exciting, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, we want another, Gatti Ward type of fight. And I understand that. But the one thing that I will give him credit for, because we were just talking about Roy Jones, and Roy Jones obviously was tremendous talent when he was prime. But before he was Russian Roy, there were a lot of people that called him, remember, Reluctant Roy. You know, there were fights that he didn't want to take. You know, he and Hopkins should have fought their rematch much earlier than 16 years is too long to wait.
Exactly.
But the one thing that I'll give Hopkins for, because, you know, when he fought Kovalev, there were other fights that he could have taken, you know.
Yep.
And
easier
fights. Yeah, sure. And I said, you know, I said, okay, why Kovalev? Because he said, you know, if you're not going to fight the best, what's the point? He said, you know, it's got to mean something. You know, so whatever you say about the man, and look, he sometimes the imprudent things come out of his mouth. But you have to give him credit. I think that if you took Bernard Hopkins and there were some sort of time machine that you could bring back Monzon and Hagler or whoever, you know, in the middleweight division, and they were out there, he'd fight them. I'm not saying that he'd beat all of them, but he'd be willing to fight them. I mean, you know, the thing is that I give a lot of credit to people that are willing to take chances.
Exactly.
Boxing is not like the NFL or the, you know, Major League Baseball. I mean, the thing is, you don't have, you can't, Golden State Warriors say, well, we really don't feel like playing our next game against the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, give us the 76ers. You know, we'll take a, you know,
give us the Sixers.
There's not a schedule where you have to fight, you know, whoever's coming up next. Boxers conduct people, and you're right. I mean, Golovkin has been ducked, and one of the things that Cotto can say that gives him an out is, well, gee, I didn't feel like paying $1.1 million, step aside money plus the $300,000, and a lot of people can understand that. That's a lot of money to give to an organization. You know, a sanctioning body where all the officials that when they go up to fights, they're staying in, you know, 5-star hotels and they're eating, you know, like lobster and what have you. So a lot of people can understand that and agree with them, but you're right. It also provides a convenient excuse for steering wide of Golovkin.
Get out of Golovkin. Yeah, exactly. In boxing, the mandatory thing is there are no mandatories.
You know what else, though? If Bernard were to try Abraham, that might be – I remember Bernard saying before the promotion, this will be one of my easiest fights. I don't know where he got that idea, but I do believe
Abraham would be.
Fighting
I know
Abraham,
do,
I mean, he hides his face. He's shorter than Bernard. He can be maneuvered around. He comes in one way. He waits too long to start up his style. I mean, I actually would give him a chance against Abraham. I would give him zero against Kovalevsky, but I give Bernard a good chance against Abraham. I really think he might be able to outbox him.
Well, you got to remember that some of the things that Bernard says, you know, that are particularly outrageous, you know, they're calculated. They're calculated for effect. I remember, for the first fight between Roberto Duran and Ray Leonard, Duran was saying this, he was saying that, he was disrespecting Ray, saying nasty things to his wife and so on and so forth. And he says, I'm going to beat him at his own game, and it didn't work, and you saw what happened in the second fight. Hopkins is a master of that. I mean, you know, September 29th, 2001, 18 days after 9/11, the fight got postponed, but all the stuff that he did, throwing down the Puerto Rican flag and everything, he had Trinidad, you know, completely out of his game plan. You know, he was going to go out there and I'm going to knock him out. And he went crazy and he paid the price. Hopkins is, I think, probably next to Muhammad Ali, he probably does the best job that anyone I've seen in boxing. You know, for just getting people mentally discombobulated. It's all part of his thing. You know, he wins the mental war before the first bell ever rings.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, we're at the end of our hour here. Bernard, I want to thank you very much. As always, you've given us a tremendous background in boxing and shared your knowledge with us. And I appreciate all the reading that I did, your column over the years, and everything you've done for the show here. Every time you're on, we have a spike. I forgot to tell you that when I talked to you earlier. Generally anywhere from 8 to 12% higher. So.
Wow, gee, I didn't know that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
call me Mr. Ratings.
Yes, sir. You will. Yeah. I can't wait to check them tonight because we usually run around 176,000 listeners, and then 17,000 or 18,000 listen during the week on the archive. So this should be a big, big week for us, and I appreciate it. I wish you and your family a very happy Thanksgiving. Chris,
well, I tell you what, I appreciate what you guys do too, because I mean the thing is that I have maintained this. I mean, I've seen great football games, great basketball games, great baseball games, but I always maintain that when you get a great prize fight, and they don't happen as often as any of us would like, but when you actually get something that is truly great in that ring, it is as good and as compelling as anything there is in sports. And there's no
nothing
doubt
like
about
it. Nothing like it. Can we get a prediction from you, Bernard?
Well, yeah, I had to make a prediction, and I picked, believe it or not, I don't see this ending early. I picked Canelo by decision, unanimous decision. Maybe because I'm getting up in the age myself, I appreciate the spring in a young guy's legs that I don't have anymore. You know, I gotta sit down. We'll see. I mean, the thing is that I don't put anything past Cotto. I mean, Cotto's a guy, I think, who's been criminally underrated for long stretches of his career. But he's a guy, he can hit. He can box. I mean, he's yeah. he really does not have a whole lot of exploitable weaknesses. And, you know, of course, he's got the Freddy touch now, so we'll see how that plays out.
Chris, what's your prediction for tonight?
My prediction, I've been thinking about this fight all week. My buddy called me from Arizona. Both of them can do the same thing. They can box.
Yeah.
They move forward, and then they take time off during a ring and back up and do some dancing. They change their styles. They don't have one straight style. I'm waiting to see how one style, the style that Canelo picks out to start out with, I want to see what Cotto does with it. And then I want to see if Cotto's getting the best of him, I want to see what Canelo's going to do to offset maybe a better game plan that the other guy has. So it's going to be interesting because they both can do different things. And I think in the long run, I can't see Cotto getting over that awful beating that he got from Margarita. I mean, Freddie Roach has done an amazing, made a different guy out of him. I thought he was washed up, would never fight again after that Margarita beating. But he's come back. But I think over the course of 12 hard rounds against a younger man, I don't think he could do it. I don't think he could do it. I think he may have gone to the well one too many times tonight. I don't think he'll be embarrassed, but I don't think he's going to win a decision. And I definitely don't think he's going to win a knockout. So I'm going to go with Canelo.
It's funny because I think Dr. Chris essentially said exactly what I was thinking, that, you know, over the course of a long, brutal war of attrition, which this has the potential to be, you got to go with the bigger, stronger, fresher, younger guy. And, you know, again, Cotto hasn't, you know, since that Margarito fight, man, he really hasn't been the same guy. But I think to a certain extent he rediscovered his amateur boxing touch. You know, he's learned to – I think it's made him a more versatile boxer. I think he's much more fluid than he used to be, much more diverse attack than he used to have. With that said, I think there are going to be times in the fight where he's going to make Canelo look amateurish and, you know, at times make Canelo look bad. I think he has the kind of footwork and fluidity to do so. However, I think over the course of, again, like Dr. Chris said, 12 long, hard rounds with a bigger, younger, fresher guy, I don't think he can do it. I don't think his body holds up. I'm not necessarily predicting a stoppage. It could happen. But I don't see Miguel Cotto winning the fight. I see Canelo either winning it by, a close decision, because the fight's going to be close, or a late stoppage with the fight being close at that time. Yeah.
This is a fighter's fight. This is a fighter's fight. You know?
Yeah.
The public, won't call it a great fight, but a fighter, because it's got so much style involved there, so much. Technique's different. And can they I never seen two guys could change their style in one round so fast. Go one way, and the next time he's going backwards, he's counterpunching, moving side to side. Jeez, I don't know who the hell's going to show up tonight, but I just say overall, the 12 rounds is too long, you know, for Cotto to hold up. He's a smaller man. He can be hit, too. I mean, he can be hit.
Cotto is more than likely going to bag rounds early. He's capable of starting out with his footwork, his jab, and using his outside angles. The one thing that scares me with him in this fight, in this particular fight, is his training. Freddie Roach is wonderful for Cotto when he's fighting Delvin Rodriguez, when he's fighting Daniel Gill, when he's fighting the one-legged Sergio Martinez. He's a wonderful, wonderful boxing coach for that. But for Canelo, coming forward against Canelo is what's best. Freddie Roach teaches you how to come forward, how to get your explosive offense off. That's not going to work for Cotto in this fight. The one thing about Freddie Roach fighters, you're going to get your offensive explosion, but you better have the armor. If you do not have the armor, he cannot teach that. He's not going to help you with your defense as far as your defense. He'll help you get offline during your offense, but that's about it. So, and Cotto, as you guys alluded to, after that Margarito beat, he doesn't have that armor. and that's, I think that's just going to tell a difference. I got to go up Canelo too. And I think, honestly, that it won't go all the way.
I'm going to agree, guys. I'm going to, you know, I don't see it. But, you know, there's always can be a surprise, but I don't think we're going to see one tonight. So, anyway, guys, hey, I got to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving to you, Chris.
You come up with, we're going to make you the historian now. You come up with Bernard Dukeson. You went back to the 50s. How old are you?
I'm 68, you know, so I'm still on the funny
side.
Okay,
I thought you were
70.
In your 40s. Well, you're 68, you can remember all them guys then.
He really had a long time, Chris.
Like you said, he was from Newark. Hey, one last thing, guys. One of the best things about the fight tonight is that, no, you know, we don't have either fighter to stand in front of a camera waving big wads of $100 bills. and the main thrust of the conversation is how much money the guys are going to be making. It's about boxing. And you don't have one of the fighters that they have cameras showing driving up to training in a $4 million car, you know. It's about the boxing. It's not about the purses. It's not about the money. I'm sure they they care about it, but I think the focus is where it needs to be. And it kind of got, in addition to not being a great fight, I think the focus of Mayweather and Pacquiao, it got misplaced. It became, to a large degree, about how much money and all the records it was going to break at the box office and for pay-per-view. I'm glad we're not hearing any of that for this fight.
Agreed. Yeah. Indeed. That's what's the fight the best. That's it.
Well, I want to take a minute just to say to all of you, hope you have a very safe and happy and healthy holiday season. We appreciate everything everybody has brought to the table tonight. And, Chris, you know, you're like a brother to me. So are the boys. And I appreciate every week that you get on here and share with the folks, because our numbers have gone from when we first started out about 1,500 a night to over 200,000 worldwide listeners, and it's a shame we don't get paid for it because we could share that.
200,000 people listen to me. I can't get my wife to listen to me. That makes me feel better. all right, guys. All right. See you next week. All right.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye now. Easy, Dr. Chris.
All right, gentlemen. Happy Thanksgiving to you, all of you.
Thank you, Bernard.
Thank you, Bernard. Thank you, Bernard.
Hey, Ty, you want to leave us out?
Hey, you know, it was a great time talking to Bernard Fernandez. He's, you know, always been a big fan of his, and always lovely talking to Dr. Chris. You too. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys. We wish you both and everyone who's listening happy Thanksgiving. Bob is our co-pilot. Z?
Another wonderful show. I want to thank all my Fighting Words family, you guys. I want to thank Dr. Chris. I want to thank Bernard Fernandez. These shows are definitely a memory of Bob. And everybody have a good holiday. You want to hear any Fighting Words? Please do call.
I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank you guys again for your week in, week out preparation and the wealth of knowledge that you bring to the program. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation. Men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, just let them know that you know that they're there. We also want to send out our congratulations to a good friend of ours, Mr. Nick Jaffray, who just bought the Philadelphia Soul of the Arena Football League. We just called him. I got to call him back. But these programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Ryan Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Patrol Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrolman Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department, Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, and Harris County Deputy Sheriff Darrell Goforth. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the rains be always at your back. May the winds be always at your back. May the rain fall softly on your field and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hand. Good night, happy Thanksgiving, and God bless.
Shem Aleich Ma Yilama Shem Mahezah Yilama Son Hashem Nevorat Svet Hakuig Again Ma Yilama
responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. Bye, Bob. We love you. We miss you.